Now, the White House said this week that the federal deficit is forecast to reach $1 trillion this year. That'd be the first time it's hit that mark since the four-year span following the Great Recession. Before that, it had never happened. Meanwhile, the national debt is more than $22.5 trillion and climbing. As a candidate, President Trump promised to eliminate it. Instead, it's gone up $2.6 trillion since he took office. He also vowed to wipe out the annual deficit. Our guest says it's time for a grand deal on deficits. Both parties should play together to do it, and that there's no room for sacred cows. Brian Riedel is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a member of their Economics 21 division, where he specializes in budget, tax, and economic policy. He's a native of Appleton, by the way. Brian, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
How worried are you, and how worried do you think we should all be about the overall federal debt and this annual deficit?
We should be very worried. It doesn't seem like it's mattering now. Interest rates are low, the economy is growing, but we're hitting such an avalanche of debt that at some point it's going to hit us hard, and at that point the pain's going to be much worse. You know, right now the deficit is just about to hit $1 trillion. And within the next decade, if we just keep current policies, it's going to go to $2 trillion. And if interest rates rise, it could approach $3 trillion. Over the next 30 years, the rosy scenario from the Congressional Budget Office is an $84 trillion deluge of new debt. At a certain point, financial markets are going to react. Interest rates are going to rise. The interest cost is going to force up huge tax hikes. And the problem is, we've seen from other countries, by the time you get to that point, it's too late to do the reforms. It becomes very difficult to consolidate at that point. The spending cuts and the tax increases would be like nothing we've ever experienced before. So my preference, the wise course of action, is to start now and start gradually phasing in some more modest reforms rather than wait for events to force more drastic changes.
Let's key in on this annual deficit for a minute. That's the shortfall for the year. $1 trillion, what I know has some people worried is, okay, the idea is when the economy's bad, it's okay to run a bigger deficit. The economy's pretty good right now, and people are wondering, so why, in the midst of a good economy, is the deficit going up?
The deficit's going up for a couple reasons. About half of the budget deficit is attributable to a combination of the 2017 tax cuts, as well as the 2018 budget deal that increased discretionary spending. The Republicans and Democrats came together on that grand plan. So half is, you split up half of it between recent legislation, the tax cuts, and the big increase in discretionary spending that both parties agreed to. And the other half that's actually the bigger long-term problem is the shortfall in Social Security and Medicare. Social Security and Medicare this year are going to run a combined cash shortfall of about $450 billion, and it's rising rapidly. And the scary thing going forward is the cost of the tax cuts and the discretionary spending deal are going to stay at about $450 billion a year. That's not going to rise. That's going to stay about the same. The reason the deficit is going to keep rising is because the Social Security and Medicare shortfall in the next decade is going to go from $450 billion to $1.7 trillion. Basically, that $1.3 trillion increase in the Social Security and Medicare shortfall is what's going to get us from $1 trillion to $2 trillion. But to try to make a long answer short, everybody's to blame for the mess we're in.
White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow says, don't worry about it too much. Here's what he said at a CNBC event last week.
There are basically only two ways to lower budget deficits. One is economic growth, which is worth the $3.5 trillion per point of GDP. That's why I'm harping on USMCA. It's not small potatoes. And limited government. And we are pursuing both. I don't see this as a huge problem right now at all. Quite manageable.
So we're going to grow our way, in effect, out of the deficit. What do you say to that, Brian?
You know, Larry's a friend of mine, but I could not disagree more with him on this. He's correct that if you could increase economic growth by one percentage point, say from 2% a year to 3% per year, that would take care of about $3 trillion over 10 years. The problem is the baseline is about $13 trillion in deficits, so you're only getting rid of a quarter of it. The bigger problem is increasing economic growth permanently by an entire percentage point is extraordinarily difficult. It's difficult in part because the workforce has pretty much stopped growing now that the baby boomers are retiring. And because the workforce isn't growing very fast, more of the growth has to come from productivity. And getting an entire percentage point increase in productivity would be almost unprecedented in the past 40 years. So economic growth is very important, and if we could gain a percentage point out of it, that would be great. But we're not going to grow our way out of the deficit. It's just not. The math isn't there.
Brian Riedel is with us from the Manhattan Institute. We're looking at the federal deficit, $1 trillion this year, the growing federal debt as well. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions, your solutions, if any, at 800-642-1234. Brian, before we get to the kinds of changes you would like to see in the federal budget, let's get into the politics. The notion of Democrats or Republicans working together on this seems unlikely, but you point towards some historical examples that could be inspirations.
Yeah, you know, we've had grand deals before. In 1983, Social Security was going bankrupt, and Republicans and Democrats came together in order to finish a grand deal. What was important about then was you actually had a program going bankrupt within weeks. That brought everyone to the table. And in fact, a lot of the budget deals we've had have been triggered by an event. Like the 2011 discretionary spending caps was the result of us hitting the debt limit. There was a panic about hitting the debt limit. What we need sometimes is a short-term trigger that motivates everybody, that grasps people's attention, and that makes it worth doing something. The other thing we need historically that we've really lost is a Congress that can actually work together from both sides of the aisle. When I researched the 14 main deficit negotiations over the past 40 years, what struck me is how in the 80s and 90s, even parties that were very partisan were still able to work together in good faith when they wanted to. Over the past 20 years, I couldn't find a single case study of a deficit reduction deal where I consider the negotiations to be in good faith. And that worries me the most. You can always have events bring people to focus on the deficit, but if the parties aren't even on speaking terms, the negotiations are going to be a mess.
Let's turn to that first part first, the idea that, okay, there's some looming disaster. Nobody's going to let this thing happen. It used to be we thought nobody would let a government shutdown happen. That's for sure going to motivate action. Is that still true?
You make a great point. We used to have these penalties where if there isn't a budget deal, the government shuts down, so everyone comes to the table. Well, we've had multiple shutdowns in the past few years inaugurated by both parties. It used to be the debt limit would motivate everyone to come to the table. Well, now they just suspend the debt limit. It used to be that you would have these automatic spending cuts called sequestration, and Congress would come to the table to negotiate a deal. Well, instead, they just cancel the sequestration. And so there's really no looming crisis that brings everybody to the table. But the lack of a looming crisis doesn't mean there's no danger. It means that the danger is lying in wait, and that in 5-6 years it's going to be the economy going under, and we'll have wished that we had something in the meantime that had triggered us and brought us to the table. But we need new default policies, new triggers, new events that motivate people to do the right thing.
And then when it comes to negotiating in good faith on the other side, it seems like there's a lot of built-in penalties, political penalties for doing that. Either some change you might make might give the other side ammunition against you in an election, or if you negotiate too much, there's a serious risk of a primary challenge from within your own party.
Yeah, the base is controlling both parties right now on this issue. Republicans have this view of, you know, we can solve the deficit by cutting waste, fraud, and abuse and welfare, and there's no reason to give an inch or negotiate with the other side. Of course, you could eliminate all waste, fraud, and abuse and welfare programs tomorrow. You wouldn't come close to balancing the budget. The narrative on the far left is that if you just raise taxes on the rich and cut defense, you can balance the budget, and so there's no need to negotiate with conservatives on anything else. Yet, I've run the numbers, you could eliminate the Defense Department and set 100% tax rates on the rich, and it wouldn't be enough. The problem, of course, though, is the politics just don't bring people together. And even when members of Congress sit down, instead of kind of doing good faith negotiations where they sit down together and go, okay, how can we get to yes? What do you need and what do I need? Instead, the way they negotiate is mostly through threats, through intimidation, through attempts to use reporters and the media against each other. It's extraordinarily ugly. And again, members have to learn how to negotiate with people that you don't necessarily like.
Brian Riedel is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, member of their Economics 21 division, talking about the growing national debt and the annual budget deficit that the White House says will reach $1 trillion this year. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the debt and deficit? Do you think about the debt and deficit? Is this something you think we should be worried about? What would you like to see happen to chip away at the debt? What would it take to get, as our guest says, both parties negotiating in good faith? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the rising national debt and the growing annual budget deficit. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, questions, and solutions. Our guest is Brian Riedel, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. We'll go to your calls now. Karen is with us in Cambridge. Karen, hi.
Hi. Good afternoon. My question is about the Social Security Trust Fund. I didn't think that was part of the federal deficit. And so could you please clarify that? And since you're doing a lot of math, if we raise the limit on Social Security contributions, how would that look for refunding the Social Security Trust?
Karen, thanks for the call. Brian? Brian, are you there? Oh, looks like we've lost. Brian dropped off the line there. We'll reconnect with him as we talk here. Brian Riedel from the Manhattan Institute, member of their Economics 21 division. He specializes in budget, tax, and economic policy. We are talking about the federal debt and deficit. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll take some of your calls and comments while we're trying to connect to Brian Riedel right now. Michael is with us in Appleton. Michael, hi.
Hi. The question that lady just asked is a great one, because I don't know of any, even a penny that's part of the total deficit. But my comment and question is, the war debt, not a penny of that has been paid for, nor has there ever been a war tax or defense tax to pay for defense or the wars in the Middle East. And that's at least since the last 18 years, half of the debt, half of the national debt, over $10 trillion. And that's something that... Yeah, I never hear individuals like this address that. So that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Michael, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234, taking your comments on the federal deficit and the annual debt. We've been hearing from people on Facebook. Joel says the perceived role of the government has grown far too large, in my humble opinion. Furthermore, states are required to operate under a balanced budget. Why should the federal government be any different? Michael writes, we'll never have a balanced budget. It's really nothing to worry about. We'll go now to Jim on the line in Lake Geneva. Jim, hi.
Hi. I really have to recommend you guys for finally putting on a program that interests me. We've been spending way too much time wasting energy and our voices talking about things of minor consequence when we have things like the national debt that is getting worse, as we have been hearing, and I suspected it. Haven't ever been able to find the numbers on. So we need to get taxes in line, and I think a lot of that is increasing cost to government, and then that all contributes to the debt. So please, NPR and other have other people on to talk about the debt more often, because it is very important to all of us and all of our children.
Jim, thanks a lot for calling in. Brian Riedel is back with us now. Brian, I'm gonna one of the callers you missed there said, hey, isn't Social Security a trust fund? Isn't it separate? Isn't it isolated from this whole deficit argument?
Well, in theory it is, but in reality, Social Security is running a $100 billion deficit this year, and the deficit's going to rise to about $200 billion over the next 10 years. You see, the surpluses that were raised in the past got spent in the past. And so this, what they're doing now is they're drawing down the trust fund. But the trust fund is not actually a pile of money. It's just new. It's just a claim on new taxes. So basically, it's a shell game. Social Security is contributing to the budget deficit. It's about $100 billion this year. It'll rise to about $200 billion in the next decade.
And our caller had also asked about the caps on Social Security collections, tweaking those. What kind of changes could we see in Social Security itself that you think might be politically possible and effective?
Social Security is actually pretty easy to solve because there aren't that many options. You can raise the eligibility age. You can cut benefits for the wealthiest individuals, or you can raise the tax. One of the ideas that's out there is to raise the cap on Social Security taxes. That's about $135,000 right now, and to have people pay taxes all the way up. That would solve about 40% of the long-term shortfall. You'd still have to trim benefits. You still have to raise the eligibility age. One of the challenges, though, is that raising the cap is such a big tax increase on the wealthy that it would push combined state, federal, and FICA tax rates to about 60%, which some people may say, well, that's great, and that may be fine, but it doesn't leave a lot of room to raise taxes to fix Medicare, which is an even bigger problem. And there's only so much you can raise taxes on the rich before the rates get too high. And so Social Security it's easy to solve in a vacuum, but it gets really hard when you're trying to solve it with Medicare, too.
We also heard from Michael, who brought up the U.S. Military role in the Middle East since 2001 and in Afghanistan, for that matter. He says, hey, a lot of money, trillions in effect spent there, no extra tax collections to pay for that. How big a factor is that in the deficit?
In the past, it was a decent but not huge. Give me some numbers. Under President Kennedy, defense was half of the budget. But before 2001, before 9/11, it fell all the way down to 16% of the budget. The effect of the wars in Afghanistan pushed it back from 16 to 20%, and it has actually since fallen back down to about 15% of the budget. So as a percent of all federal spending, defense is actually a little bit lower today than it was before 9/11. It's about 15% of the budget. You know, certainly people are free to advocate additional cuts in defense, but it has actually dropped as a percentage of the budget. It's not enough to fix the problem, but, you know, people are certainly free to advocate, you know, realistic reductions.
Let's bring on another caller now. We've got Aaron on the line in Oregon. Aaron, hi.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it. Great segment. Brian, I'm a father of a 4 and a 6-year-old, and this is an issue that really scares the heck out of me because I try to think about where their world is going to be in 10, 15, 20 years. And, you know, we've talked a lot about what isn't being done, what needs to be done, but if past is prologue, nothing's going to get done. So I'm wondering if you wouldn't mind reading some tea leaves for me and telling me what you think you know, our world's going to look like in 10, 15, 20 years.
Well, first, my girls are 4 and 7, so I'm in the same boat you are. You know, I think ultimately the deficit is going to get bigger, and at a certain point, there will be a response in the federal budget. Interest rates are going to start to go up, which is going to cost more to buy a home, buy a car, and taxes are going to go up because the interest cost of the budget is going to be worse. So my prediction of what we're probably going to have to get used to when our kids are older is a more slow economy because of the size of the debt and its impact on interest rates and growth. I think it's probably going to hurt the economy. Additionally, I would expect significant tax increases eventually, just because I don't anticipate right now that there's ever going to be the will to make the difficult choices on spending because you have a lot of programs like Social Security and Medicare that are very tough to reform, and programs like defense can't get you all the way there. You know, Europe has value-added taxes or national sales taxes of about 20 or 25%. We may end up heading in that direction, you know, because our spending levels are going to approach Europe. So, you know, I would expect, if we don't fix this, a slower economy and a lot higher taxes.
And very briefly, Brian, do you hear anybody in places where they can make a difference talking about this lately?
I live in Washington, D.C. There's a lot of talk about it behind the scenes, but there's also a viewpoint that if you talk about it publicly, you're going to get beat up because you start having to describe tax increases and spending cuts to popular programs. So the politicians that I talk to that I used to work for say, well, the public doesn't care, so why should I?
Brian, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Brian Riedel is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, a member of their Economics 21 division. He's an Appleton native. We talked to him about the rising national debt, which surpassed $22 trillion earlier this year, and the annual deficit this year hitting $1 trillion. If you've got anything else to join in with about that, you can still post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, multimillionaire Jeffrey Epstein faces a new round of charges of sexual trafficking of minors after a chilling expose of his past crimes and what many say was a soft punishment. We'll get the latest in that story. Democrats in the U.S. House pushed for a minimum wage increase. Our guest gives us the details. You can join in with your thoughts. Plus, it's this week's edition of Food Friday. This week, let's make ramen. Our guest says the Asian noodles are a flexible ingredient that we can have a lot of fun with. That's coming up tomorrow on Central Time.